Support for WPR comes from Fitchburg Family Pharmacy, offering the full line of orthomolecular vitamins and supplements, with home and work delivery available. Information about services is at whatagreatpharmacy.com or on Facebook.
We have lots of music in the air, of course, throughout the day and night here at WPR, but live music, too, coming up from time to time, yours to enjoy. And at this time of year, in particular, there's a lot. And one of the pieces that comes up in one form or another from year to year is something called It's a Wonderful Life. And here to tell us how wonderful it is the composer and kingpin of It's a Wonderful Life, as being produced in Wisconsin here. Welcome back to Wisconsin Public Radio, Andrew Abrams, longtime associate of this institution.
Yes, thank you. It's always a pleasure to be back.
Well, the genesis of this, of course, we know about the film from 1947, and I think it's based on a story by Valentine Davies that just kind of took off.
Yes, the Greatest Gift is the book that it was based on. Yeah. And we, Capital City Theater, which is I'm the artistic director of, we wanted to have a show in our year that was our holiday show, something we could do every year and make our own. And I had started writing the show a while back with my collaborator, John Atkins, and we decided that we were going to finish it and bring it to Capital City Theater and showcase it here. And we are world premiering it next week. It's very exciting and a little stressful.
World premieres tend to be that.
They do.
But it's interesting difference in the way you've gone about this, because you had what I'm going to call, for lack of a better term, an oratorio version.
We call those readings in musical theater.
that you did almost a year ago now.
Yeah, so we had everybody at music stands, and we invited people to watch, and the show's changed quite a bit since then, but it's readings in musical theater are great because we get a lot of good feedback. We see what works. We invited the audience afterwards to give feedback on things they liked, things they perhaps didn't like as much, what they liked from the film that was in there, and things like that. And we took all those notes, and we rewrote the show, bits and pieces here and there, music too, to make it better. So readings are always great barometers.
Well, what about the music for your version of It's a Wonderful Life, since you wrote it and perform some of it too, I think, still? Or was that just for the
reading? That was just for the reading, yeah. Now I step away, but we're having it orchestrated this time, so it'll be a pit of 16 musicians, and the music is very much in the style of the decades that the show takes place in, so you won't feel like you're pulled out of that era.
Oh, so you'll actually have something like 20s and 30s,
yep.
And 40s.
We have a little Charleston in there. We have a Andrew Sisters number in there. We have an Italian national song in there. It's a real fun romp, as they say. It's going to be a lot of fun.
Before we forget this detail, this Capital City performance, or a set of performances of It's a Wonderful Life, take place at the Mitby Theater in Madison, November 22nd through December 1st, with full orchestra of 16 and a number of players, and one of them... should I mention Lionel Barrymore? Would that be okay? Would that be fair, Tom Henson, since you're playing that part of the Scrooge-like Mr. Potter?
Well, that'd be appropriate, just as long as they realize that I am not in the wheelchair.
Well, that's okay. And how would you go about being Potter? Is it just kind of a pushover because he's such a crab and such a misanthrope?
Well, first of all, he's a lot of fun to play, I guess.
The bad guys usually are, though.
Yeah, and, you know, as an actor, I've always enjoyed playing some of the bad guys on occasion. I've had some experience playing the role before, but I'm so excited about playing this version, this new, fresh version that's never been done before outside of the reading. You know, just stepping into him and with the quality of both, you know, behind the scenes, Andy and John, the composer and the writer, and of course the talent that's assembled both behind stage and I'll be sharing the stage with, is just awe-inspiring, and it just makes it such an easy process for me.
Now, the composer of the music for the movie was the American composer with the Russian name, Dmitry Tiomkin. I mean, he was Russian-born, but Americanized fabulously. I mean, he wrote the music for High Noon. He wrote the theme for the Western Rawhide. You know, it's just amazing how versatile Dmitri Tiomkin. But we have a little bit of the music that he wrote for It's a Wonderful Life, just to help get us in the right frame of mind here. I think this is the finale that we're hearing, the kind of one of the more cheerful notes from the play and the film. And this will give you some idea of It's a Wonderful Life. Didn't realize that Beethoven wrote movie music.
I didn't either.
I didn't remember it from being in the film either. It's a Wonderful Life, but I suppose a lot of us will be re-watching that film in the next few weeks, and so we see if it's in there or not. But that is in the Dmitri Tiomkin score for It's a Wonderful Life. And Andy Abrams, when you wrote your music for your upcoming performances of It's a Wonderful Life, you didn't even listen to the Dmitri Tiomkin score.
I did not. And
that could be a good thing.
Which could be a good thing. But I will say there is a song in the movie that everybody knows that might be making its way into the score here and there in little nuggets.
Buffalo Gals.
It might be. It might be.
With Jimmy Stewart and Donna Reed singing that on the brink of a disaster, as I recall. You've mentioned your music and that you're going through these various decades, which in itself would add a kind of a contemporaneous quality to it. But in terms of the production in general, are we talking a kind of a 1947 feel? Or are we talking something more contemporary?
Well, people will still feel they're seeing the film, but we wanted to bring some contemporary thoughts and approaches to the show, so that we felt like the show was a little more in the now. If you remember the characters of Ernie and Bert in the movie,
which is where
the Muppets came from. Yeah. Yep, they are played by women.
Because it was Ward Bond and I forget the other
one. I don't
one.
Even remember the actors who play them, but we thought, you know, why not? And
sure.
The movie is so male heavy anyway, and we wanted to try to change that a little bit. We diversified the show a little bit. There's a little more contemporary take on the idea of suicide, which is a major theme.
It is, of course.
And the views of that back in the 40s versus the views of that now. And we wanted to touch on that a little bit because I think it's important. So we've contemporized it just a little bit.
I do have to ask about staging this. And one of the key scenes in the movie, they're doing the Charleston, and then the lid to the swimming pool opens up.
Yes, we are doing that.
Now, you could do it in radio, you know, fairly easily, but on stage, how do you do that?
I have to be honest with you. It's a little bit of a mystery to me, too, because I don't go to all the rehearsals, and I'm kind of waiting to see exactly how they're doing it. I know they are doing it. I know there is not water literally involved in it. But I know there's some forward pushing that happens while they're dancing around them, and it's still there.
Okay.
So that's pretty exciting.
Well, that sparks our curiosity.
I think the hardest scene in this show to do is the Pottersville scene where he has never been born and everything's upside down.
Sure.
It's one of those, it was very complicated because you don't want to write a bunch of songs because songs stop the action, and that's a scene where you need
the action to move forward.
And I would encourage people to come and see the show only to sort of see kind of if what we did worked and if they like it. It's definitely a little different, I think.
So Tom Henson as Potter, are you getting in the mood with this, or do you find yourself outside of the performance being kind of a crabby misanthrope just because you're playing the character?
Well, like I said, you know, it's like watching the talent that I'm working with is just amazing to me. But occasionally I do kind of find a little place to go to work on my lines so I'm not around people, because I do have to take on that persona. And when there's a lot of happy stuff that's going
turn
on,
that happy stuff.
It's kind of hard to turn that on.
Just, oh, you do it very well.
Yeah, well, so it's not typecasting, though, anyway.
Well, that has yet to be determined.
No, you're the nicest guy. No way.
Well, it sounds like the nicest show, and it does have a lot of wonderful music. I've heard a proto version of it, and, of course, the play is a wonderful play also. It's a Wonderful Play. Right. It's a Wonderful Life.
It's a wonderful musical.
All of that. Well, thanks, Andy Abrams and Tom Henson, for giving us some ideas about this upcoming series of productions of It's a Wonderful Life, Capital City Theater, Mitby Theater in Madison, November 22nd through December 1st. And break some legs.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.